Hello everyone and welcome to the 47th episode of the Connectivity Podcast. I'm Mattias Fridström and I've spent the last 25 years inside the connectivity community. In this pod we invite guests to deep dive into one or many subjects to simply learn more about connectivity. And in this 47th episode I'm extremely happy to have David Tomlin from City Fiber joining me. So, welcome, David. So, for the people that doesn't know you, who are you, David?
Thanks for inviting me, Matthew. So, my name is David Tomlin. I am the CTO at City Fiber. And what does that mean? Well, City Fiber are a provider of fiber to the premise, both residential and business in the UK. And I joined the company about 7-8 years ago to change it from very much a startup to much more of a run rate business at scale. We now go across over more than 3 million premises in the UK.
Wow, that's cool. And it's really only in UK. You don't go to mainland Europe or elsewhere? Or
We are absolutely focused on the UK market. That's the one we saw right for us to open competition 7-10 years ago when the business was founded. Now, I've had the privilege of being able to work across Europe in previous roles at other companies and seeing the different environments and different commercial and governmental and societal requirements of how we build networks. And they are interlinked. So what I am doing now is absolutely focused on the UK, but lessons have been learned from Europe, in particular Scandinavia, but also right now things we've been doing over the last couple of years being used and leveraged elsewhere because we're a community that should pick up best practice.
All right. Oh, that's really cool. And we will get into this much more in the coming days, but I'm just curious about you yourself. You know, I've known you from other companies you worked with before, but how did you end up in the connectivity industry? You know, why did you end up here?
Yeah, so mine was a chance. I studied physics with space science at university in the early 90s. Probably fair to say I didn't study it with the level of diligence I possibly should have. And I spent quite a lot of time on the computer networks in the UK at the University of Kent. I did some actual work on the US NASA computers for orbital dynamics calculations for my degree. But to be honest, I probably spent quite a lot of time playing on that early internet using everything by command line and playing on the MUDs, etc. And when I left university, I was looking for a job. There were no jobs building rockets in the United Kingdom. And then a friend mentioned that a company in the UK were looking for people who knew about the internet. And in those days, not many people did. And I went along to the interview alongside my brother-in-law as well. He was also a physics student who'd used the internet a lot. And we were employee 5 and 6 to start up what was a new ISP, wholesale ISP in the UK called Cabletel, which is now better known as Virgin Media.
Wow, cool.
And then from there onwards, I went through everything from call centers to system administration. That was my first fully technical job, building news, Usenet news sites, Usenet news clusters, DNS systems, mail systems. And then I moved after about 5 years to a company called Level 3.
Wow.
A job again. Somebody phoned me up, said, are you interested in moving roles to a little bit more of a mature organization? And it appealed to me. I'd been in a startup and I wanted to go work in a company which was through the first startup phase and into the second phase of growth and see it not as someone who was there from the start, but see how challenging it can be for someone who's coming in as the business has already got a degree of scale, but it's still quite dynamic and agile. And I think that underpins everything I've done since. I always look for a company and a culture that will challenge me.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's really, really cool. And it's a kind of a fantastic background. You've been pretty much everywhere in the connectivity industry, and now you're back to the very basic of it, the sort of infrastructure in the ground. So I guess you have an advantage knowing how people are using the fibers when you're now working installing the fibers. Is that a true statement?
Absolutely. I think a lot of the work that we did in the late 90s around the evolution of access, because people were using the internet in different ways, it was evolving, and the rate of evolution was just amazing. I think the lessons learned then about you can't necessarily predict the future accurately, but you can extrapolate certain trends. Those trends can also be applied to how users are leveraging the technology that we're putting in, leveraging fiber to enable those technologies. Now, what do I mean by that? Bandwidth always grows. It's a paradigm we know is inherently true. How it grows, how it shapes, is the big uncertainty. And being prepared for a high degree of uncertainty when you're looking at the evolution of networks, I think is a key part of any architectural strategy of one of our telecoms businesses and CSPs, DSPs. But then we need to make it real. And how do we make it real? We make it real by choosing the right technologies. And fiber was clearly coming into its own for business, enterprise, and large-scale networks in the late 90s. But now it's ubiquitous. Fiber is the technology for the home user to be connected to the internet and other services for intents and purposes. And the world has moved on, and it's just an amazing change over the last 10 years.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's been amazing up here in Scandinavia. And as you said, you know, countries are following, and pretty much everyone everywhere is building. So for the people that doesn't really know, you know, when you're out there installing fibers, where do you predominantly install these fibers? Are there long-distance fibers, short-distance fibers, local neighborhood fibers? What's sort of the best version of city fiber, and where are you the strongest?
So where city fiber is focused is in the city to a premise. Mm-hmm. So we build our own data center, our own exchanges, where we put in our equipment. Mm-hmm. And we connect that exchange to every premise in the city.
Okay.
It's a high density build, and it uses a range of technology and construction approaches. So the first thing is, in the majority of locations in the UK where we build, we actually have built our own what is called core network. That's where you put the main large scale networks that link to the maybe approximately 400 premises at a time. And those core networks, we dig up the streets where there is third-party duct available. If we've got the ability to leverage it, we will, because it's about trying to not cause too much disturbance. Mm-hmm. But equally, if that duct is not significant enough in size, if it's not big enough to allow us a 20 and 40 year infrastructure view, mm-hmm, of how much fiber we need to bring in over time, then we will go and construct. It's about a methodology where we touch the network once when we're building the infrastructure, rather than saying we're going to come back every 5, 10, 15, 20 years and overlay and rebuild it. Mm-hmm. And that's the core part there, as exchange to these groups of 400 premises. And once we get to those groups of 400 premises, we call the fiber network the distribution network. Mm-hmm. And we can connect those premises underground. Again, we can construct underground to get to the premises. We can leverage in the UK a BT kind of ducts into the premises, and we can also use aerial. So we'll go up a telegraph pole, mm-hmm, we'll put in our own telegraph poles, and we'll connect through to the premise. Now, it really depends upon the location. Mm-hmm. There are certain areas in the UK that are required to be underground. There are certain areas in the UK where everything is aerial, and there's areas where literally the street can be a mix and match of both. Yeah. And in the UK, it's probably about 60% aerial, 40% underground. But each city, each town, each area we build in is inherently different.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one thing that we're embarking on and have been working on for about the past year is we built urban scale. We build these really dense locations mm-hmm. where we get fiber too. And the fiber spans between the exchange and the premise may be never more than 12 kilometers, 15 kilometers long.
Mm-hmm.
However, we're leaving behind a huge amount of the UK, which is not in an urban area. It may be in a small market town, 5 to 10,000 premises, maybe in a village, 500 premises, or it may be in a hamlet, 6 to 12 premises.
Mm-hmm.
So we're working with the government to expand our network to those locations. And that uses different construction techniques, longer spans of aerial fiber, longer spans of core network cable, which we call spine cable in this case, which reaches out into these semi-urban and rural locations to reach these harder to use, harder to reach premises. So it's a real mix and match of fibers for the majority of what we build.
Okay. And the type of fiber you're using, I know there are different fiber types. You know, there are ones specified for going super long distances under the sea, and there are other types for other things. Is that something you work with as well, or are you using the same fiber type everywhere?
So for the fiber type we use in the access network, where we're connecting the exchanges to the premises, we're consistent in the fiber type we use.
Okay.
And the reason for that is because the access technologies, which is the lasers that we put on those fiber networks, are tuned for that particular fiber type. Where we change that is in the cases where we are connecting cities together. So one thing we realized as we built this network, we're in over 100 cities in the United Kingdom. When we built the network, we realized that some of our customers, some of our service providers can reach us in each one of those locations. But some of our service providers can't reach every location. They wanted us to aggregate the services, bring them back from the premise through the exchange to places like London and Manchester to hand those services off to them. Now, and there are two ways to do that. One, we can connect our exchanges together with other people's services.
Mm-hmm.
So BT, Neos Telecom, Colt, we can use their services to connect those cities together. But in some cases, because we built these spine networks or we already have existing network between locations, we build our own long distance network.
Mm-hmm.
And that can span thousands of kilometers. And that absolutely is a different fiber type. It's tuned to allow the electronics and the optics we use there to go for the longest distance possible with the least degradation in the signal of the service we put across.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the technology choice for the application is absolutely key, and the fiber is one of those key technology choices.
Okay, oh, but that's really cool. That's a good answer. You said you've been around CityFibre for 7 to 8 years. You know, what do you feel has changed since you joined the company? Are you doing the same thing 2024 like you did in 2016, or is the way you install fiber and the way you work with fiber very different now from then? Or what would you say there?
So it's definitely evolved.
Yeah.
I think the market has evolved. So when we started on this journey, we were fully 100% our own construction. We weren't able to leverage poles and duct from Openreach at that time, but that became then a product that could be consumed.
Mm-hmm.
So that meant we changed the way we were building the network, connecting our fiber network, and constructing our fiber network, and then leveraging third-party duct and poles.
Mm-hmm.
We've also learned a lot more about aerial.
Mm-hmm.
If we went back 7 years ago, we would do 99.9% underground.
Okay.
But we've now got a lot more experience in aerial. It can make the build faster. It can make it more scalable on a shorter notice. But yet, you also have to consider that the fix times may be different.
Mm-hmm.
Underground is underground. It's more protected. A tree branch falls down.
Mm-hmm.
It's fine. The underground doesn't get hit. A tree branch falls on an aerial cable, it will tend to snap it. So we've had to learn a lot more about these different type of maintenance regimes that we have to have at scale. Mm-hmm. And that means that we've also had to embrace other branches of technology in our IT systems to look at how we built the network, which we build up in this database of how every fiber connects to another fiber. Mm-hmm. And we correlate that against the events and information we're getting back from the network equipment, which tells us what is up, what is down, and where it looks like it may be broken. So all of that intelligence, when we started 7 years ago, would have been very manual. Mm-hmm. Whereas now, with the just huge leaps in analytics, in machine learning, and in AI, we're putting all of this data together to become a lot more proactive in service management, resulting in fundamentally better customer experience.
Okay, that sounds terrific. Is there anything you still want to change, you know, or are you the sort of running the company optimal right now and for the foreseeable future? Or what needs, is there anything that fundamentally needs to change again? Because I can say 10 things in our side of the connectivity business that needs to change. But yeah, what would you change on your side?
I think we need to continually push on quality.
Okay.
I mentioned that the data that we're getting from how we built the network and the data we're getting about events that happen on the network are really giving us great opportunity to improve customer fix times when something breaks. Mm. But it's only so good as the data you have got.
Yep.
So as a business, we're focusing a lot more on how do we ensure every part of that construction phase is recorded as effectively as possible. Mm. Instead of just paper records, we use visual AI tools on our inside plant. That's the cables inside our building and have done now for five years. So we know we've got a really good life cycle record of every single cable, when it was plugged in, the quality of the termination ends, how clean it is. Mm. Cleanliness in a fiber plant is essential to reliability and availability and customer experience. Mm. And we need to build that in the outside plant. That's the bit from the exchange to every premise. Mm. So we know and we can prove how deep every duct was buried, how every pole was installed, how every customer was connected when we are going to install them for the first time. Mm. And by doing that, we build up this intelligent data set that can guide us. And it's really important because we've always maintained a 20-year view, a rolling view of our life cycle. So we've chosen a fiber plant which has 20, 40 years of life cycle quite comfortably on it. And we've chosen a technology to light it, the access technology that reaches from the exchange to the premise, that has 7 to 10-year cycle. When we started, it was GPON. And we're now moving that to XGS-PON. And we're finding the more data, the more quality data that we can have about how we did the installs, we can then ensure that the migration of a customer from GPON to XGS-PON will be as clean as possible. And then as we improve our data collection, the type of data we're collecting, the breadth of information we're collecting, as we do that whilst we're doing these migrations, we can see a time that that will benefit us when we move from XGS-PON to 50 gig PON in another 7 to 10 years. So it's all about building these data sets of information that's really key. And that changes working practices. So we must evolve working practices continuously to leverage these huge changes in AI and machine learning that are sweeping through our industry at this time.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I fully understand. Thanks everyone for listening. In the next episode, we will continue to talk to David Tomlin, so stay tuned until next time. Please also remember the X handle, ConnectivityPod, for updates.